We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
That was not a great transition. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. We want to thank everyone for calling and texting and emailing.
Most of all, thank you for listening today and all week.
Yes, it's been a lot of fun this week, and much thanks to everyone that listened, and especially we want to thank our wonderful support staff, our executive producers, Dustin Rhodes.
Listen up closely, Snowflake.
And Kevin Zipak is a very special guy. Just ask him.
Who's kind of a heartthrob.
And Ray. Oh, Ray's out. But we still Ray's thank out. Ray. And Studs is filling in. Adam Staszynski does a remarkable job. Great White Sox fan and a good hombre. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Adam.
I guess. Okay.
And now is the time in the program when we get to kind of shift gears a little bit and talk to Dan Bernstein. Dan,
why?
Good morning.
All right, so when you're at when you're at the strip club and you said you were investigating something or someone, what was the story?
I don't know. I don't want to get into it, do I? I
think why it was, not? I it think sounds
somebody,
awesome.
You know, I think really somebody left their car at the side of the road after leaving a strip mall and a strip club, not a strip mall, and they,
okay.
and they abandoned a $300,000 sports car.
I gotcha.
If you remember,
so I do.
I get a call from Cityside. They want me to go there. They need someone to look into it, and I'm like, it was funny because I did. I was like, I'm telling my wife, get a load of this one. I'm heading out to the club, and then I got out there. And it ended up kind of turning a little bit sour. No one wanted
you're
to
like,
talk.
Yeah, I'm already there. I'm already halfway there. Sure,
yeah, exactly.
Okay, hilarious. I can imagine that's the case. Yeah, that was quite a story at the time. I remember that developing, and we're on the air. I think thinking like, okay, wait a sec, what?
Yeah,
and
it worked. I mean, if all said and done, other than losing the car. But at that point, you know, I mean, I'm saying he was never suspended from the league or anything, so that's good.
And I don't think there really was a crime, was
no.
there?
There was, I don't no. know.
Nothing.
Don't
well,
know
not that,
that
we know of. Nothing came out of it.
I'm pretty sure that was a big old nothing burger.
Except
well,
for
the crime
urban
would be,
legend.
Well, yes. The crime would be if you were, if you had tested positive for any alcohol.
Correct.
And the fact that you departed and left your car sitting there would indicate that they couldn't test you, right?
Correct.
So I'm saying that strategy presumably came from somebody that it was a correct strategy.
Yeah, bold strategy, Cotton. We'll see if this pays off, right? That was and indeed it did. I don't know.
Is that on day one or day two of training camp that's kind of gone over with players? What to do in those situations.
The Chris Carter, whatever, is have a make sure you have a fall guy.
Right.
Oh, my God. That's one of the greatest.
You've got to have a fall guy in the crew.
Yeah. Silence of the Lamborghini is what one texter calls it.
Did you see that house is for sale? I did the story yesterday, the Midday Midway, old Mrs. Littman's house where Buffalo Bill had the murder pit in the basement and everything else. It is the actual home in Pennsylvania can be yours for $298,000.
I thought that was a story. I didn't know that actually happened.
The owner of the house said they did use the interiors, but then was very clear in saying, well, they made it look way dirtier than it actually is. I'm like, I'd hope so. I hope you're not trying to
she
sell
puts
the thing with
the lotion.
Right.
That is the
with like the moths flying around and the plastic
sheeting. When it comes to fictional houses, I prefer the Home Alone house to that one.
Yeah, there you go. Can I tell you a story of seeing that movie? I went to a fundraiser for the theater company that William Peterson was in, and was that Steppenwolf? I can't remember.
Victory Gardens.
It was Victory Gardens. Whatever it was, there was like a fundraiser, and so you show up and they play that movie, and we didn't know. You know, we had not heard a word of the movie. It was like a you know, I didn't even know it was a horror movie. And so I was there with a girl, a friend of mine, and we were sitting there and watching this. And it was, you know, I mean, that, when you first, the first time you saw that movie, it was like very traumatic. And then William Peterson came out to speak. And then they brought out that guy, Ted
Levine.
Ted Levine comes out to talk. And literally people are running out of the back of the theater. I mean, it was like, now we'll have the mass murderer come out. Like, you could hear screams and people running. It was, I mean, it was the strangest
thing. That was real life.
It was, he's a terrifying character.
He is. I mean, he didn't then, come out with like his
no,
junk
no, no.
tucked behind
no,
his legs or anything.
No,
right?
No. Yeah, okay. He's up there posing. Right? No, but he came out just like, you know, and here's the Ted Levine. And, like, I'm not kidding you. There was, like, this, like, oh, my God. Like, it was terrifying.
That's awesome. We're having a discussion the other day after, I don't know if you heard Clancy Brown, who was on with Danny Parkins. And he was, the subject came up, and I have a friend of mine who's an actor. And we started talking about the highest differential between a fearsome or evil role and how nice the actual actor is in real life. And I was, so he, my actor friend, was talking to some of his friends. He happened to be on set. He's shooting something right now. And in between takes, he was sort of crowdsourcing this and texting me with all these other actors who were sort of nominating people for this. And it was great. And the somebody brought up Ted Levine because of that character. And he's just a really sort of down-to-earth guy. And actually, my friend did a workshop with him out in Ojai, California years back and sort of thought of that. Clancy Brown's name came up from Shawshank, as did Bob Gunton, who played Warden Norton in Shawshank. And then, you know, it was really fun to hear the discussion because, like, oh, what about Gene Hackman because of Little Bill from Unforgiven? And they're like, no, Hackman's not that nice a guy, so that doesn't
it's
work.
I could see that, right?
He's Sir Anthony Hopkins.
That was nominated too. But you know what? We came up with what we think is the definitive answer based on how iconically evil the character is.
Jose Altuve.
And to the point, and the reason it came to mind was this person later in life would show up to talk to schools or groups, and people would recoil seeing her. And it's Margaret Hamilton, who played the Wicked Witch of the West.
Oh,
really?
Yes. I didn't. And like when she would do the cackle, and people would start crying.
I knew you were going to cackle. I knew you were going to cackle.
Like, kids who were traumatized by that movie and that character at a young age, and it's almost like once you play that, there's no going back because you're always that.
I saw Anthony Hopkins interviewed one time, and honest to God, it was like Chris Farley's character interviewed him. It was like, hey, remember the time that you played that guy?
Yeah,
that
awesome.
Was scary, wasn't it? Like, it was. That was, and he was literally like, well, I mean, I obviously it was a role in which I played. Like, he was trying to explain that he wasn't a cannibal.
That he's an actor and he pretends for a living, right?
That was great. Remember that time?
And actually, truth be told, in the movie Manhunter that was
that
William Peterson
underrated.
Was in, Brian Cox's portrayal of Lecter was wonderful in that movie.
Yeah,
I mean, really. I mean, he's a great actor. And now he's doing
good linebacker too.
I think he's doing the McDonald's. Isn't he voicing over the McDonald's spicy nugget ads, I think?
Well, I thought you were going to say Succession, because I've been trying to get these guys to watch Succession. He's fantastic on that show.
I hear that's good.
He's great in everything.
And also the McDonald's.
Got to get onto that.
And he's doing the McDonald's spicy nugget voiceovers, too. But that's so good for him. He's cashing a big check.
What do you think of Jean-Luc Picard doing the Uber Eats ads with Mark Hamill? What do you think of...
I don't get it. I saw the ad and I don't really understand it. Other than their star power, I don't really know what the bit is. Other, like, I thought there were, it was going to be something about ham. Like they were going to order ham because they're just hamming it up.
It's competing. It's competing like science fiction actors,
right?
And they're so they're competing about their sandwiches, and then they're competing in dumb games.
I didn't really get it either, to be honest.
Okay,
with
well,
you.
I thought it was funny. Yeah. I Patrick Stewart is from my father's hometown, so I've always, as is James Mason. So I've always, you know, loved those two actors just because they were like the most famous people to come out of Huddersfield. Actually, Patrick Stewart near Huddersfield, but a big Huddersfield FC fan. When they had their big run and made it into the Premier League, he was always spotted at their games.
And I guess that pairing of Patrick Stewart and Mark Hamill also plays to the weird sort of Star Trek, Star Wars rivalry that seems
science
to exist
fiction,
that I never really understood. I never took sides in that, and I didn't know that it was like a Marvel universe versus DC universe kind of thing. Like I didn't know you weren't allowed to enjoy both.
Well, Star Trek is definitely Marvel in that comparison.
Why?
So, because it's better.
Okay.
Not to take a stand on it, but Star Wars, really? Come on, are we kidding each other or what?
I would pick of those two, the original Star Wars
ended with teddy bears stabbing people with toothpicks in order to win the universe.
That's so true. And in the original story, they weren't supposed to be Ewoks. It was supposed to be Wookiees. That was supposed to be originally, instead of some moon of Endor, that was going to be Kashyyyk, which is Chewbacca's home planet. And I don't know if there was like a budget cutback or what they had to do. They couldn't find a whole bunch of 7-footer, you know, former basketball players. It was easy to find little people to play the roles, but they just okay, this is good, but let's make them teddy bears instead of Wookiees.
I got a great friend named Mark Wukas, and I was going out to meet him and his buddy, who's a friend of mine as well, Matt Ebach. And so I'm talking to my brother, and I said, I'm going to go meet Wukas and Ebach at a bar over here. And he's like, oh, is that the place? Is that the bar from Star Wars? Every time I hear those names, I start laughing.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, sorry. Wait, no. Is that not good enough pun?
No, that was good.
You guys are on one today. My God.
Was that a sigh? Was it a sigh?
You did. You gave me the
laughing.
Whole sigh.
I was laughing. I was laughing. I was laughing with you, not at you.
There you go. Yeah. It was a pained sigh. And it wounds me. And it hurts my friends. Why do you mean to my friends?
So I think you've got the plan. You guys both said something that I took note of today. You, David, 30 points. Show me 30 points. And Molly, you have been on the how to win the game, which I think is different than show us that the Bears are actually good at offense, that you're right about having a plan to just get out of there with the win. And that's what they've been doing, is sort of figuring out some wins that they have. But it's not allaying any fears that the offense still sucking. So ideally, you get both. Ideally, because the offense is good, you also happen to win the game, and they're not necessarily separate tracks.
Well, you have to take advantage this weekend because of the way your schedule breaks after this. Because if you don't get well Sunday offensively and you don't take advantage of this, then you're just going to create more doubt and questions moving forward because your next three opponents aren't messing around, and the Panthers might not be either. But you got to feel like they're winning three games in a row. They're feeling that's maybe as good as it's going to get this year for them. So stop them in their tracks, score some points, get out of there with the victory, and build some momentum going into the Rams game.
Well, has anybody answered the question of what details? When he kept talking about the freaking details?
Well, I think he's talking to his receivers. I think he's probably talking to all of them. But this passing game is as detailed as it is. You have to pay attention to those freaking details. So if it's 5 yards, it's 5. It's not 3.5. If it's 17, it's not 15. And I think he's probably talking to a receiving core that outside Allen Robinson has been wildly inconsistent. You don't know what you're getting. You're dealing with a rookie, a third-year guy that sometimes plays like a rookie. So I think probably it's those guys that he's talking to.
Okay, because I mean it's always targeted. It means something, but I didn't know if it was something about past protection, or knowing who's hot, et cetera. You know, knowing when it's your turn to look for the ball, if maybe there's a blitz coming from your side, and just being aware of some of that stuff and some of the instincts there of if a running back who stays in, is the linebacker coming, when do you go out? And because Foles is good at that. Foles is really good, I think, at picking up some of that stuff. And I thought Sage Rosenfels on Tuesday did a really good job in fine detail of talking about those plays and what they can do. I wish with all of that, just once in my lifetime, I could see this offense execute a screen pass properly.
You should read the story Biggs did.
I did.
Wasn't that fantastic?
It's everything I've been saying. They're not good. And it's like we sit through. We're going to talk about that because what that did was it sort of laid bare this nebulous feeling that you have that Bears games don't look like other games because their offense is bad. And this is the truth here under this brilliant offensive mind, Matt Nagy, and all of the other brilliant offensive minds that he's hired and now churning through another quarterback, that nobody thinks they're good because they don't score. Other teams get the balls, like, oh, third and eight, big deal. Yeah. All right, great. Here, well, it's, you know, fourth and two, great, big deal. We know we can pick up 2 yards. And with this, it's pulling teeth.
That's not wrong, but no. I think that's how you become a good team, is by winning close games despite everything else that's happened. So you could boil down this Bears 4-1 record and pick five plays that, had they gone another way, they wouldn't be 4-1. They might be 2-3, you know. So if you win close games, you can get away with that because you know they're not like everybody else, but maybe they're the outlier. Maybe they're the team that gets into the playoffs and there's a playoff field full of teams that are scoring 30, then there's the Bears. They're not terrible, but they're not great, but they're somewhere in between, and they're winning, and they're getting the breaks because maybe the opponent, but I don't know. I mean, we can't declare them bad
yet.
They
barely beat the Giants.
But yeah. But it's interesting. Like Ed Sammons talks about that, the Westgate guy with in the big story. You know, if you compare them to the Lions spent their offseason talking about dagger time. This is it. This is dagger time. This is where we're going to put teams away. That was their idea of solving that issue. And all they do is kind of stab themselves in the foot. You know, it's like a man holding a pitchfork and, oh, you know, they set it through their shoe. And the Bears have managed to win those games, even late, even with the teams throwing into the end zone, even allowing the Giants not to go away. They've managed to get through dagger time.
Well, that's why I don't want to be too hard on Nagy, the head coach, because I think he's got these guys playing hard, and they do believe and they do play hard, and all of that silly stuff we like to dismiss is in the larger body of work on display. Poorly coached teams don't win those games. And they do play hard, but it's the details. It's exactly what he said.
Dan, that's right.
The way the gears grind in this offense is a completely different issue than their level of buy-in, their professionalism, their discipline, their understanding. I think they play hard for this guy.
I think that's a great point, that sometimes, you know, and present company included, we get lost. I forget you focus so much on, well, you know what? He's really that's a bad play call on third and two. And why are you in the shotgun again? Stop getting cute. When we focus so much on Nagy, the offensive coordinator, we forget about Matt Nagy's the head coach. And the fact that they're 4-1 is a credit to what the job he's done as a head coach, despite the maybe inadequacy he's shown as a play caller.
Especially this year. In every sport, what is being demanded of keeping players physically healthy, mentally healthy. We talked about it all year with the Cubs, and I think for a rookie manager, David Ross, in similar fashion, Ian Happ talked about it when he was on with us, that most rookie managers struggle with some of the big picture stuff and struggle with some of the leadership stuff. Hell, I talked to A.J. Hinch about it. And as Steve Stone discussed, A.J. Hinch in his first go-around when he was 34 in Arizona, had no idea what he was doing, was completely overpromoted, and talked about what a bad job he did because of things he didn't know and wisdom he didn't have. But what's going on this year of all years, there's never been anything like this. And the strains on teams and the strains on coaches who are always seem like they're miserable and put upon even in a normal year, everything's times 10.
And in fairness to A.J. Hinch, the garbage cans echo differently in the desert heat.
I got to tell you, just watching the AL and NLCSs, just watching these series, I find myself frustrated for the Dodgers. Like, what the hell is wrong with the Dodgers? You go back to some, you know, genetic issue. How can they fail at this point? And then you look at the Astros, you know, prolonging their please certain defeat, and it's like, gosh, I just wish Tampa would win now. I find both of these series getting frustrating for me.
What's frustrating for me is watching all these teams continue to hit when the playoffs start. It's like, unlike the Cubs, they don't stop. Their ball keeps going over the fence.
And you know what they like, you watch these teams, and this is more the American League than the National League, but they don't beat themselves. They're playing pretty well. They're doing things you have to do, making plays and using relief pitchers correctly, and it's just frustrating.
It is frustrating, but I'm with Mully. I watch the Dodgers, and I just wonder if they get eliminated, how much frustration that franchise and that fan base is going to feel this year, just because of the way they went in and the type of regular season and that 60-game schedule that they had. They were the overwhelming favorites, and then look at them now. They're on the verge of elimination because of another Kershaw outing, because of a lot of things, but they're wildly inconsistent in the postseason.
And it's variance again, and this year, we say it every year, even when there's 162, we say the 162 determines the best team in baseball. The playoffs determine the winner of the World Series. And sometimes sometimes it's the same team, and sometimes it's not, just because of the nature of these series. But what's cool this year is because there's no travel, and because of the frequency of these games, you're not allowing teams to dominate because they have two outstanding starting pitchers and they've got a couple of relief arms that can pitch every single day. This is full roster against full roster. It doesn't matter if you're top loaded, because everybody matters. Everybody's important. All your pitching depth matters. All your position players matter. We've never seen this before, when we're used to having multiple days in between so planes can go back and forth and guys can get rested up, and you'd see the same people dominate. That's not happening now.
I wonder if, when we look at Kershaw in particular, and we think about, well, you know, they didn't win because, and he had bad, that was the cheating scandal. That was all the cheating scandal. And I was willing to accept some of that. I was willing to say that would explain it. And I know that he's in worse condition now than he was, and he's more injured. But losing that game last night, it almost takes away that as an excuse, even though I still think there could be a level of excuse to that.
Well, part of it is, in the playoffs, you're facing your better teams, generally. I mean, there's no coasting.
The difference is so profound.
I know.
And it's almost painful. And you just, you see the guy and you're like, no. Come here, fella. You're going to be okay. Oh, no, you're not.
that's my Stan Van Gundy thing. That I feel compelled to give him a hug.
Well, you don't want to hug Clayton Kershaw too tightly.
No.
Not with his back.
No, you don't want to hurt him. But just like
I have a Jeff Van Gundy thing. I'm compelled to give him a kick.
No, but Stan just looks perpetually in need of a hug, and everything would be okay. You know, he just, it's always kind of a, he evinces this sort of avuncular world weariness.
Jeff's getting back in the league.
It sounds like it, yeah.
Looks like it.
Sounds like he wants it. Oh, by the way, I got a text here from the vacationing Lawrence Holmes, who says that regarding the Uber Eats or whatever, the Patrick Stewart, Mark Hamill, he said, not only is it Star Wars, Star Trek, it is Marvel versus DC, because Patrick Stewart is Professor X.
That's right.
And Hamill is considered to be the best iteration of the Joker.
Really?
Okay.
I thought he was considered like a really bad actor that only got a role because he played it earlier.
No, he got raves as the Joker.
I'm just taking a shot.
It was just his voice. It was on the animated Batman and Robin series, right?
And wasn't he also, wasn't he nominated for a Tony for Amadeus?
You're looking right at me like I know the answer to
that.
Well,
look it up, biatch.
I'm not your producer, biatch.
Whoa. Where'd that come from?
Oh, that'll get his cooperation.
This guy shows up at the studio a couple times. He starts throwing his weight around.
Yeah. Right. Wow.
Yeah. Bugger off.
Dan always.
to bugger off.
Oh, that's beautiful. What do you got today?
Well, we're busy. We have just had to move some things around. We're going to talk a lot of Bears today. Anthony Heron is going to be with us for the entire 10 o'clock hour. Matt Miller is going to join us at 11. There's a big college game filled with NFL prospects this weekend, and he's going to preview the return of the Big Ten that's coming up. Elena Getzenberg of the Charlotte Observer, who covers the Panthers, is going to join us at 11:20. And then I'm also the Lawrence Holmes Show today. I'm going to be here from noon to 2. Cole Wright of Marquee Network and formerly of NFL Network is going to sit in studio for that show.
He's doing a Bear show too. Coming up, have a good show.
Yep. Tell Lawrence we miss him and we bow to him in all matters of DC Marvel.
Indeed, we do. Thanks, guys.
I stand corrected. See you, buddy.
Thank you very much.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us, and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.